Well, good morning. Ooh, here we go. Nice and loud. My thanks to Nathan for letting me share with you this morning this message. Doing things a little differently this morning, which sometimes I kind of like to do. So the gospel reading and the sermon are going to be offered as one complete unit. I'm not actually reading the gospel reading, but I'm really telling you the story. And this is a favorite passage of mine. It's breakfast on the beach with Jesus and his disciples. It's found in the Gospel of John. And it's a story that has a lot of visuals and a lot of sensory kind of movement to it that's important for us to know. So I want this sermon to involve all of us, which means this is a hands-on message for this morning. And I want you to use your sense of sight and hearing, smell, and maybe even taste. So during the sermon, there will be times where we'll pause and we'll be passing out some items. And I have four ushers that'll help in the sanctuary and my assistant up here for the choir. For instance, you'll be getting a plate of charcoal. And I'm going to ask you to actually take a piece of charcoal if you're willing and to hold it. Your hands are going to get dirty. So following that, you will get a wet wipe so that you can clean your hands. And you'll put the charcoal back on an empty plate along with the used wet wipe. There'll also be a piece of bread coming around. You're welcome to break off a piece. If you want to eat it, you may. It is not gluten-free, and my apologies to my wife for that and anyone else. But you can, you know, hold a piece of bread. And then lastly, there'll be a container that has some sardines in it. No, you do not need to eat the sardines, but I want you to at least smell the fishy smell to add to our moment. When the items are passed to you, you'll then pass them to the person next to you, and we'll try to make sure that everyone gets served. So again, as a pastor for 41 years, there were times I'd like to do things differently in worship, but this morning I'm doing this not just to be different, but I really want us to use our senses to understand this story in its complete way. And our senses were made by God. Our sense of smell is one of the strongest memory triggers that we have. And so as you're smelling some of these items today, I'm hoping it'll help to bring the story to life for you in a different way. I want us to be able to enter into this story, understanding what the disciples were going through as they meet Jesus on the beach on that Sunday, on a Sunday time or a daytime following the resurrection. So as Pastor Nathan has mentioned, we're gathering here in this season of Easter. We remember the events of Holy Week, the triumphal entry of Jesus and the disciples into Jerusalem, overturning the tables in the temple, gathering in the upper room for the Last Supper, the betrayal, the arrest of Jesus, the trial, the beating, and his death and crucifixion on the cross. We remember the silence of Holy Saturday and the joy of the dawn of Easter. We remember on Easter morning the women going to the tomb and finding it empty. And then we learn that Jesus appears to Mary, and later in that evening to the disciples as they are gathered in an upper room. And a week later, he appears once again to the disciples. But beyond those two appearances, we don't know a whole lot about what the disciples are doing. We can imagine the disciples being a bit confused and frustrated. I mean, they've gone through all these events of Holy Week. Then Easter evening, they see Jesus. A week later, they see him. But what do they do in between times? What are they supposed to do? Where is Jesus? Why aren't they seeing him each and every day? I mean, for 3 years of their lives, every step they took, every place they went, was because Jesus led them there. I mean, it wasn't like the disciples would go, you know, hey, Jesus, you know, I think we should turn right here and go to this town over here. We haven't been there before. Well, we don't hear the disciples giving directions and taking the lead. Jesus is the lead all the time. And now there's seven or eight of them, as our story would tell us, gathered together, kind of wondering, well, what the heck do we do now? Where do we go? And so they're kind of twiddling their thumbs, restless, and Simon Peter all of a sudden offers, hey guys, let's go fishing. Now, if a group of guys were gathered together in a lakeside cottage and someone said, let's go fishing, we'd go, oh yeah, that makes sense. That's what you do. But for the disciples, being confused and not knowing what to do, they go back to what they used to do. And many of them were fishermen. And so the group that's gathered said, sure, why not? I mean, at least it's something to do. So John tells us that they're actually back on the Sea of Galilee, which requires some transportation and movement that we're not sure how that happens, but we'll go with John on the story. And so the guys get together, they get their fishing nets, they got a boat, they push off from shore, and they head out. Now they're fishing for quite a while that late afternoon and into the evening and during the night. And they don't catch a thing. The nets are empty. Now, I'm not a big fisherman, but I have gone fishing a couple of times. I've been fishing with my grandkids, and I know the frustration when you're out fishing for even just a half an hour, and you catch nothing. I can't imagine hours and hours with a bunch of guys in a boat catching nothing when this is what they used to do for a living. The weariness, the frustration must be significant. I wonder what kind of language is going back and forth among them. I mean, what kind of anger is spilling out over what the heck are we doing wrong? And yet they continue. As the first light of dawn comes over the lake, the prospect of heading to shore empty has to be painful. And then, off in the distance from the shore, comes a voice. Children, you have no fish, do you? Consider 6, 8 hours of fishing. You've caught nothing. And then some guy on a beach yells out, children, you've got no fish? Do you wonder if someone wanted to throw an oar at the guy? What they wanted to do and respond? I mean, how dare he insult them by calling them children? I mean, these are grown men who have been fishermen. They know what to do. And why insult them that they have no fish? They have to be troubled. And who is this guy anyway? Well, with heads held low, a couple of disciples yell back, no, we haven't. And then the person on the beach offers, cast your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some fish. Seriously? Who does this guy think he is? How does he know where the fish are? How frustrating and irritating it has to be. And yet, when you've tried everything and someone offers you a suggestion, maybe you give it a try. And so they gather up those heavy nets, tired and weary, their arms aching, and they toss them on the right side of the boat. And in a moment, all of a sudden the nets are jumping. There's fish jumping. They have to hang onto the nets with all their strength that they can because they're filling up faster than they can even imagine. There's so many fish they can't pull the net into the boat. And so they hang onto the net just to make sure they don't lose the fish. And then the disciple whom Jesus loved stands up in the boat, points and looks at the shore and says, it's the Lord! Guys, it's the Lord! And then there's a splash in the water. And Peter has dove overboard. He stopped and put on his clothes first because oftentimes when you're out fishing like that, they would fish naked. Who knew? But Peter then puts on his clothes and he's jumping in and he's already swimming to shore. Not really a surprise. Peter was always the spontaneous one, acting without thinking, just diving in and doing things like that. Well, while Peter is swimming to shore, the rest of the guys in the boat are hanging under those nets for dear life. They grab an oar and start trying to row into shore as well. It takes a lot of effort. They're about 100 yards away from the shore, John tells us. So it'll take some time. The closer they get, they're able to hop out of the boat and pull it into shore. Now on the beach, there's a fire going. And as their feet hit the stony shore, they could smell the smoke from the fire. Jesus must have been up early because he has prepared something for them. He calls out the disciples to bring some more fish to add to the fire and then to come and have breakfast. What an invitation after a long night of frustration and catching nothing and then all of a sudden having a net full. And now Jesus is inviting them to breakfast. How great is this? And so they move up the beach and there's a fire made of charcoal. And that's where we need to start, with charcoal. Because the charcoal might not seem very important in this story, and yet I want to offer that it's a key element of this story in many ways. John is telling us about this for a reason. And so I'm going to invite my ushers to come forward at this time and to pass out some charcoal. Again, as it comes, you're welcome to take a piece and to hold it. Oh, no, you're serving these folks back here. There you go. Hey, Josiah, can you come and help me? Help make sure that you won't need to just hang out with Gummy for a moment. So again, as the charcoal is being passed to you, I want you to take a piece, hold it in your hands for a while, make sure you're passing the plate to those that are around you. Again, watch your clothing with your hands, but there will be some wet wipes coming. Hang on, Alicia, not yet. So I want you to smell the charcoal. I want you to feel the charcoal. When you think of charcoal, does it remind you of something recent or something from your past when you were a child? What images and memories come about because of charcoal? For me, it's a reminder of family picnics growing up. My dad worked in retail, and oftentimes when he had a Saturday or a Sunday, we would go on a picnic up to Niagara Falls, one of our favorite places, a lot of parks up in Niagara Falls. And we would eat lunch and supper there and eat over a charcoal fire. And I can remember when I finally was old enough to actually pour the lighter fluid on the charcoal and strike the match and light it. That was a big deal back then. So I think of charcoal, I think of those family memories. How about you? What memories does charcoal have for you? Well, for one person sitting on that beach, the smell of charcoal brought back some pretty painful memories. Can you guess who that would be? Who might not like the smell of a charcoal fire? John wrote about that account, and he wanted us to notice something. The Greek word anthrakia is the word for charcoal, and it's found in only one other place in the Gospels. That's the story where Peter denies Jesus. In chapter 18, verses 15 to 18, we can read, Simon Peter and another disciple followed Jesus. Since that disciple was known to the high priest, he went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter was standing outside the gate. So the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke to the woman who guarded the gate and brought Peter in. The woman said to Peter, "You are not also one of the man's disciples, aren't you?" And Peter said, "I am not." Now the slaves and the police had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing around it and warming themselves. Peter was also standing with them and warming himself by the charcoal fire. It's the same word used for the courtyard fire where the servants of the high priest stood warming themselves through the chilly night of Jesus' trial. And it was there that Peter denies Jesus three times. I wonder, does Peter smell the coal in his hands and remember that night, not so many nights ago, when he had denied that he even knew who Jesus was? The smell of charcoal might smell like betrayal. But can you smell the times that you kept silent when you should have spoken up and spoken about who Jesus was, but stayed silent? Maybe we simply remember that we are not super Christians, that we make mistakes, that we bumble around trying to do our best, but not always really making it. that our faith gets watered down or complicated because of the situations that arise in our daily lives. Are we really much different than Peter? If you feel a bit like Peter this morning, then you are in good company. And the good news is that Jesus is taking Peter's betrayal and doing something with it. Well, the ushers will now pass an empty plate to you with some wet wipes. You're welcome to put the charcoal back on the plate. Clean your hands if you want to put the wet wipe back on that charcoal plate. They'll collect those and bring them back to the front. Oh. Next will be coming a plate with a piece of bread on it. Again, you're welcome to break off a small piece if you want and hold it. If you want to eat it, you may. You don't have to. But to be able to hold a piece of bread in your hand is important at this point. And then we'll do the bread next to Alicia. What do you need? Need another plate? Okay, you can bring that up, Donnell. And then we want to grab the plates of bread and hand the bread out. Well, not only does Jesus have a fire going on the beach that morning, but he has bread. We can imagine some large stones gathered around the fire and the bread heating up on those stones. As the bread comes to you, I want you to take a piece. Feel free to break it off, because the breaking of the bread is an important part as well. Hold it in your hands. Smell it, taste it if you want. Make sure you pass the tray to everybody else. Can you remember a time of smelling fresh baked bread? Maybe at home, maybe at a bakery. I wonder if the bread reminded Jesus' friends of another time when Jesus took bread and broke it and offered it to them. A meal in an upper room where Jesus held that bread and gave thanks for it and broke it and gave it to them, saying that his body was like that bread and that it was going to be broken. It may not have made a lot of sense that night in the upper room during the Passover meal, but I wonder, as they sat on that beach and Jesus hands them a piece of bread, if perhaps a light went off, if perhaps it dawned on them a little bit more about what that meant. Does this really have something to do with the crucifixion? Is that what Jesus was telling us? Jesus told them that every time they eat that bread, they will remember what he has done for them. And as Jesus handed the bread to them, I wonder if they noticed the scars in his hands as he passed the bread. We live in a broken world. We don't need to watch the news or listen to it for more than 5 minutes to realize that. Can the bread remind us of the one who took all that brokenness so that we can be made whole? Does it remind us of taking communion perhaps last Sunday or a couple weeks ago? I hope it does. What about this morning as we will gather for worship and will offer the prayer of our Savior, where we'll give thanks to God for our daily bread? Take a moment to think about bread. The bread that Jesus offers to us. The bread that is broken for us. Well, in addition to the charcoal and the bread, there's fish. Fish grilling over the fire. Jesus had already caught some fish from somewhere and already had it on the fire. As the disciples walk up to the beach, they could smell the fish cooking. So this morning, we're going to pass around some containers of sardines. Now, the disciples weren't out catching sardines, but it was the easiest thing to bring this morning to give us a fishy smell, and we certainly will have that. Again, you don't need to touch the sardines, you don't need to eat them, although I did have someone offer that they would bring some hot sauce and wanted to eat the sardines. And that's fine, I get that. But I want you to at least have the smell of the sardines as it's passed around. What do you think of when you smell fish? What are the memories that are conjured up for you as you think of fish? I wonder if Jesus' friends remembered the time when Jesus took 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish and blessed it, and there was enough to feed over 5,000 individuals plus children and women. And baskets were left over after all were fed. Jesus provided not only just what they needed, but more than they needed. Did they remember that Jesus had told them right at the very beginning when he first called them, that he would teach them a new skill? Fishing for fish, sure, but fishing for people, that would be a whole new adventure, Jesus would tell them. Do we remember this morning, as we smell the fish of God's provisions for us, that God can turn the impossible into the possible? Do we remember that the tasks that are given to us is to tell others about the good news of Jesus Christ, and the good news that God provides for what we need? This morning, I want you to sit with the smell, the sight, and the touch of breakfast while I tell the rest of the story in John's Gospel. As I read, feel free to smell your hands. You can even close your eyes if you like and think a little longer. Visualize that charcoal fire on the beach by a sea. John writes to us that when they had finished breakfast, Jesus turned and spoke to Peter. I wonder what Peter thought at that moment. I wonder if it was, oh my gosh, here it comes. Now I'm going to get it. Here comes the lecture. I know it. But instead, Jesus is not in the business of lecturing people, especially his disciples. He's in the business of putting people back together. And so he asked Peter, do you love me? Not, will you try harder the next time? Not, do you promise to not make any more mistakes? Not, will you deny me again? But rather, do you love me? Isn't that the most important question? It's not based on our performance, not based on our ability to say the right things in the right moment. Just as well for Peter, and just as well for us. Do you love me, is what Jesus asks. And he asked Peter 3 times. 1 time, perhaps, for each time that Peter denied him around that charcoal fire nights before. Jesus chose this spot around another charcoal fire to wipe away the bad memory that Peter had and to replace it with a new memory. He could have confronted Peter in any other spot at any other time in the past couple of weeks, but he chose that moment there on a beach around that fire. Perhaps Jesus did this because he wanted Peter to smell the smoke and the charcoal, to hold the broken bread and to eat the fish, so that his entire senses would remember what Jesus was doing for him. It's as if Jesus says, Peter, remember how I called you to the shore of this very lake and you gave up your fishing just to come and follow me. I've taught you to fish for people instead. Remember how I promised to do great things, to never deny me. Peter, and remember how you promised to do great things, never to deny me, and to defend me to the end. Remember that it was around a campfire like this that you failed. But it was also around a campfire like this where you were forgiven. And you were given grace. Now go and feed my sheep. In this moment, Jesus chooses Peter. He chooses Peter to care for the followers after he is gone. Peter's failure hasn't canceled him out, hasn't denied him the opportunity to continue to serve and even to lead. Peter chooses to lead, and Jesus chooses us to go with him. And that is the great news, and also the great challenge. For God uses broken things. And we remember that it takes broken soil to produce a crop, broken clouds to produce the rain, broken grain to give us the bread, and broken bread to give us the strength that we need. It's the broken alabaster box that gives us forth perfume, and it's Peter, broken, weeping bitterly, who returns to greater power than he ever imagined for himself. I wonder what it was really like that morning on the beach, sitting around a fire having breakfast with Jesus. In my image of heaven, it would include a time of sitting on a beach and having breakfast with Jesus. That would be spectacular, to be fed by him, to sit at his feet and hear his stories, to be warmed by the fire, sharing bread. How wonderful. Because it reminds us that we are broken. Others have experienced failure and frustration after working so hard. And in those moments, it's good for us to hear Jesus calling to each of us, come, sit with me, have breakfast, warm yourself by the fire, take a load off your feet, relax. Come no matter what has happened to you in the day that's leading up to this. And no matter what you have done or what you've left undone, that doesn't matter. Come and sit by the fire. Jesus extends the invitation to each and every one of us to be present with him, to know his peace, his grace, his forgiveness, and most of all, his love. For me, it's a story that gives me hope and gives me peace, and I hope it does the same for you. Blessings to all of us this day, and thank you for the opportunity to share this story with you. Amen.